stand at the mic, they just told me. Okay, hi, I'm Carla. And I'm the treasurer at Serenity Inns, and I've been working with Ken for over 2 years now as the treasurer. Ken, on December 6th of 2021, Ken joined Serenity Inns family as the executive director and CEO. He came well recommended and credentialed. He's led us to reach out and help significantly more men than ever before. He was named the Biz Times Nonprofit Executive of the Year for 2023 and led Serenity Inns through all the ins and outs of working with the city of Milwaukee and starting to build a new treatment facility. He's also extremely active in the Milwaukee recovery community. Besides everything he has accomplished, he's just an all-around nice guy. Every day he tells the residents, go be great, and then he shows them how. Ken?
Thank you, Carla, for that gracious introduction. Hi, everyone. My name is Ken Jenlack, Executive Director for Serenity Inns. I'm also a father, a son, an uncle, a man of God. And so I'm so many different things, right? But I'm also grateful. And so thank you for this opportunity to talk about Serenity Inns so you guys can learn more about the program and what we do there. Serenity Inns actually took its first resident in 2004. So this will be our 20-year anniversary this year, which is outstanding, 20 years of service in the community. Serenity Inns is was born from Lutheran congregation. It was five Lutheran congregations that came together to create Serenity Inns, and it was modeled after a program in Washington, D.C., called Samaritan Inns, and they formed this organization to address the homelessness and addiction for men in the community. And so we're still going. 2004, that's just impressive to me. Something very unique about Serenity Inns is that for the 20 years or 19 years, we never ever billed for services. So we haven't billed Medicaid, we haven't been in any government contracts, we haven't been contracted with anyone. Serenity Inns has been truly running off of pure love, off of donations, grants, philanthropy, churches like Martin Luther. So, you know, we appreciate that. It was something hard for me to fathom coming in, and so I'm looking at the revenue and the resources, and I'm saying, okay, where's the billing? It's no billing. And I'm like, wow, how are we running? And so it was scary and exciting at the same time. But I realized that, you know, Serenity Inns' mission and our cause, you know, has helped us be sustainable over the years. It has helped us help men in the community. And so as of today, we have helped over 650 men since opening, which is great. And we're looking to help more men. I talked about we were not doing any billing. Me coming from a county facility or a county position, and then also being in different entities where we always bill for services, again, it was scary for me. When I came aboard, one of our foundations said, this is our last time funding you guys. Ken, we are kind of shifting our aim back to Texas, where we're from. And so at that point, we lost $50,000 a year grant. And so I started praying, right? I'm saying, okay, God, you brought me here for a reason. Are we going to be sustainable? And so, but I in the back of my mind, I go, well, what if two or three different foundations say, hey, we're no longer can support Serenity Inns. What does that do for our ministry? So I started to think, how can we better serve the men? How can we extend our program? And how can we can be sustainable? And so I was informed that a property across the street was earmarked for Serenity Inns by Habitat for Humanity. And so we were able to purchase the two lots for $1 apiece, which was amazing. And so right now we're in the process of building a $3 million facility. The construction has started, and it will be a billable service. But I inform everyone, because I don't want to go away from our mission and our ministry. And so although it's a billable services, we will continue to accept individuals that do not have insurance. And so as we continue reaching out for grants and reaching out to philanthropists and churches, the pot of money that we continue to raise will be for individuals that do not have insurance. It definitely opens up a new lane for Serenity Inns as we become a billable service. And we'll also continue to have dinner fellowship. We'll have the inn. Again, it allow us to see 60 more men a year in addition to what we already serve. And so I'm extremely happy about that. And I'll tell you a little bit about how we operate now and how we're going to continue to operate. This guy is coming to the program. The first 30 days they're there, it's pretty much treatment. They may go outside to community groups such as NAAA, CA, but we do programming in-house. And something I was able to do since I came aboard is do more groups. So we do more groups. We do anger management group. We do relapse prevention group. And so I'm extremely happy about that, which our success rate has climbed. And so we went from 44% graduation rate to 70% last year. So I'm extremely happy. And that was only by increasing our services. How the program will operate with the new facility is that they'll be at our treatment center. I decided to call it Serenity Inns Treatment Center. So at our treatment center, guys will be there 30 days, 60 days, intense services, really no outside meetings. And why we want to do that to address the trauma. And see, we know trauma that plays a part of addiction. When guys come into the program, we give them an assessment, and then we also give them a screen. We utilize a screening tool called Adverse Childhood Experiences, which is called the ACEs for short. And so that screening tool help us identify childhood trauma and how it's affecting them today. So, as we look at that and provide that screening tool, it gives us an opportunity to work with the guys and talk about the trauma, talk about the childhood experiences that may be affecting them today. So we must understand that sometime people start to cope with different things by utilizing drugs and alcohol, right? If I don't have no other outlet, we call it male adaptive behaviors, right? And so when I have to cope with anything that's going on, or even if I don't want to remember something, if I want to block something out, the drug and alcohol has become a great outlet. By me saying that, how many in here think that addiction is a disease or is it a choice? Well, you guys are pretty nice. No, honestly, so many times, and especially when it hits our family, right? We'll ask that question, why are you doing this? Right? Don't you understand what this is doing to your life? Why would you use drugs and you need to pay your rent? Because our logical mind tells us, like, that's wrong. Won't you just stop? Right? So even though we may say, yes, I believe in the disease model, some in the back of our mind, we still saying, you know what, it may be a choice. Like, why would you do that? That's pretty stupid. Right? And that's just being honest. Right? Children are mad at their parents or discouraged or hurt or think maybe my parents don't love me because they're choosing the drugs and alcohol over me. Right? Been there, done that, I understand. Right? Why are you using, you know, I want to be loved, I just want a hug, and us, you know, people outside looking in don't really understand. So you guys are correct. It is a disease. It's hard for people to understand because it's a self-inflicted disease, right? At some point, it becomes a choice. I always tell the guys now that you're in a program, we're addressing trauma you haven't used for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You make a conscious decision to go back and use, right? That's the choice part. But what we need to understand is once I start using, I lose the ability to stop. So if we want to look at addiction, once I start using, it's an inability to stop. Does everybody that drink and indulge, is they alcoholic or is they addict? No. How do I know? How do I know if I'm crossing the line? Or how do I know if I'm addicted? How do I know? There are some hard questions that one have to ask itself, right? And I'll tell you, if you use despite of negative consequences, then there may be a problem. Right? If I show up at work and my boss smell alcohol and he said, if you come back to work again smelling like alcohol, you're fired. Right? A person that doesn't struggle with addiction, they'll say, okay, well, I'm not drinking again. I'm not drinking the night before. I'm just going to show up at work and I'll be fine. But a person that's struggling with alcohol, they'll say, well, maybe if I stop drinking by 7 and get enough sleep. Or they'll say, well, I heard if you eat peanuts, then you can't smell it. Y'all know about the peanuts? Okay, never. If I eat peanuts, then they may not smell it when I get to work. Or I'll go through extreme measures, right, to continue to have that drink, but I want to cover it up. Despite I know if they smell it or if the boss smell it, I'm going to lose my job. That makes sense? Everybody follow me? So, I always tell the guys that, you know, because some guys come in the program and they know that they're beaten, they're spiritually broke, they don't want to use it no more, they feel shame, they feel guilt, and they come in the door and at that point they want to stop. I just want to quit using. I don't know what to do. My life is in shambles. Ken, can you please help me? Can Serenity Inns help me? But something happens once they start to get their life back in order, right? Something happens when they obtain a job and start to get a paycheck, right? Something in their mind say, well, maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe it wasn't the drugs. Maybe I just needed a job. And it happens, and sometimes we'll lose a guy that way. Right? We know that the overdose death is real in Milwaukee, or all around the country. It breaks my heart, and I don't want to get emotional. But some guys will make that decision right now to go back out and use. But they never think that this could be the last time that they ever use. When I was going in treatment, drugs wasn't as deadly, right? And we had an opportunity. I can go relapse, and then I come back and I get myself back together and try it all over again. But now the drugs are cut with fentanyl and different things. And, you know, I always tell the guys, like, the choice is a deadly choice. Like, you may not come back. You make that decision to go back out and use, you may not come back to treatment. You may not get that second chance. And that's a harsh reality. And so I do my due diligence to work with the guys. I come in and I tell the guys, go be great. I tell the guys, I love you. And then some of them look at me, because we got guys that may be in the prison or been in part of the street life or gangs or whatever they may have been through, which I can relate to them, right? Because I've been through some stuff a little bit. See how I minimize that? I teach the guys, don't minimize it. But anyway, and I say, I love you. And they look at me funny. This guy don't really love me. I say, I really do love you. I love you because of the fight that you're fighting. I love you because you walked through the door. Just imagine a guy come in, his first day in treatment, and the CEO guy comes up and say, hey, you know what? I love you. What is wrong with this guy? Right? But I genuinely mean I love all the guys in Serenity Inns. I love all the guys that's still struggling with drug addiction. It's amazing that 16 years ago I went to treatment. I was able to stay clean. I was able to obtain and recover some of the things that I had lost in life. I was able to find myself. I was able to find God. I was able to get some spirituality in my life. Faith and hope. I always say I love faith and hope. Because when guys come in treatment, that's all they have is faith and hope. They don't know if it's going to work. Right? I had to find that. And so I tell guys, we used to put faith and hope in a bag of drugs. Right? When we go buy back drugs, we had faith that it was going to do what it's supposed to do. And we had hope. Like, we hoped that it happened. It wasn't no ingredients on it. It wasn't no directions on how to use this. So I said, man, you know, why don't you have faith, that same faith and hope in the program? Why don't you have that faith and hope in God? Let's just give it a try. I don't know what's going to happen. Let's just try it. And something miraculously happened, that one day clean turned into 2 day clean and then 3 day clean. And then all of a sudden, the greatest gift that I receive is looking into these guys' eyes. And all of a sudden, I see their eyes lighten up where they have some hope today. Now, you know, the guy come in and he's not, you know, doesn't have any faith, any hope. And as the days go along, you can start to see them change and transform into guys with hope and faith. And so that's the biggest reward for me as the CEO. How much time I have left? Okay. And so, all right. Because I incorporate a little bit about me into those stories, because that's what helps me with my ministry. I've been married. It'll be 30 years this year, right? Throughout all my drug use, lost everything, lost our house, lost our car, 3 kids moved in with my mom, moved in the basement, lost everything. 16 years ago, I was in a process of doing a robbery, actually. And I was in the back of a car with these guys. I had a pipe in my sleeve, and I was going to rob them. I didn't really figure out how or what I was going to do. I just knew maybe I'll hit one of them in the back of the head with the pipe and try to choke the other one. I don't know. But I was at the peak of my addiction. I was over on Burleigh, on Sherman and Burleigh, in the neighborhood. And I ran into these guys at the gas station. And I said, you know, hey, I know where you could get some drugs from. And they was like, okay, you know. And I was scared it was maybe the police didn't know, right? But I was going to take that chance. Something that goes along with addiction is desperation, right? Cravings and desperation. So I got in the car with them. I got the pipe in my sleeve. I'm in the back seat. And I tell them to pull in the alley. And so we're riding down the alley on Burleigh. And I'm like, oh. And right now today, I say, I heard a voice. I heard something tell me, like, Ken, if you do this, your life going to change forever. I ignore the voice. And I heard it again. Say, Ken, if you do this, your life going to change forever. And I said, stop the car. And they stopped the car. They're like, what's wrong? We're going to get the stuff. I'm like, let me out. I got out the car, and I started walking down the alley, and tears just running down my eyes. I'm just crying profusely, like, oh, God, I can't do this no more. I can't live like this. I can't take this. I don't want to be this way. And as I'm telling you guys this story, this is like in slow motion because things was happening so fast, like getting out the car, walking, pulling the pipe out my sleeve, throwing it in the grass, and I'm walking home, get to my mom, and I say, Mom, I can't live like this. I need help. I need help. 16 years ago, November 2007 is when I got clean. I never used after that. But I was able to go in treatment. I reflect back on that day. I'll share it with the guys in treatment. When I went in treatment, I had a small duffel bag of clothes, and I had shoes with the holes in the bottom of them. And I was walking the alleys at night. I was 2-3 in the morning. I'm talking about at the bottom of the barrel, just like I couldn't take it anymore. And I share that with them because they see me now. And they say, well, Ken, you got a nice car. Oh, you always dress nice. Man, I wish I could have that. You know, I want to be that living example to say this is what transformation looks like. This is what happens when you allow God in your life, when you allow the program to work, when you start utilizing some of the tools that we equip you with in treatment. And so I do a lot of things intentionally because I want to be that beacon of light. I used to ask God, why did you allow me to go through so much? Why did you allow me to see people murdered? Why did you allow me to do robberies? Why did you allow me to see some of the things that I saw in my childhood? I say, God, why? Why did you allow me to get addicted? Angry. Why did you allow my dad to be addicted? Why did you allow my dad to be on crack? Why did you allow my mom to do what she was doing? And I question God all the time. You just don't like me, God? What is it? Did I do something wrong? Because everybody always told me, even mom when she was doing wrong, just pray God to fix it. And I'm saying, well, what I do so wrong, God? Hurt. I'm sorry, God. It's just I remember that so vividly, right? Like that was my struggle. Like I could not understand why. But the good news, right? God was preparing me for this day, right? He was preparing me to do my ministry and help the guys in the program. He was preparing me to be a beacon of light for the guys in the community. Those that knew me back in the days, 16 years ago, they don't even understand, like, what happened. This can't be Ken. How did that happen? And so I'm grateful, right? I don't feel bad about anything I went through in the past because I knew that God was making my test into a testimony. And so I spread that to the guys in the house. And I tell them, you know, we stay completely full all the time. People call for beds and they want to get in treatment, which is, again, why I'm extremely happy for this new facility. And I tell the guys that God made this bed for you. Because someone called yesterday, someone called today, and we didn't have a bed available. But when you called, we had a bed available. So make it your time. And I think that really resonates with the guys because some of them had called before and we didn't have a bed for them. Right? And so I just let them know that, like, you're special. You're unique. God was looking at you, looking out for you when you called at this time and it was a bed available. Because we really don't do wait lists. I hate to say we have wait lists. And the reason why is because when someone needs help, we really need to help them. That's the nature of addiction. When someone calls, when you're ready to get help, it's imperative that the help is available. And it's sad to say it's a lot of times where help is not available for men in the community. And we say, you know what, we don't have a bed. And we call other facilities and they don't have a bed. And we tell the guy, like, maybe go to outpatient until a bed come available. He say, well, it's hard for me to go to outpatient because I'm homeless. Where am I going to sleep tonight? Or I'm living in an environment where drugs are all around me. So it's imperative that we build this new treatment facility. It seems small, 14 more beds, but it'll make a huge impact. One man, right, that changes his life can affect many. Prime example, right? So I always look at the ripple effect. It's going to affect the community. It's going to affect your family. We don't know what God has in store for you. You might reach the masses, right, on a different level where that's why I say I thank you, God. Like, you always been there for me. You just had a plan for me that I didn't understand. And so I'm grateful. I'm going to take some questions now because I could go on and on. Especially when I feel good. I feel good in my spirit when I talk about Serenity Inns, when I talk about recovery, when I talk about the men in the program. And so we build in a 14-bed. We currently have a 12-bed facility, and we have a alumni house, which is an apartment building that guys can move to after they complete treatment, which actually holds an additional 14 guys.
So does anyone have questions? Kelly, cool.
Okay, so you said that you have about, what'd you say, 60 people a year you help?
So the 14-bed facility, we kind of averaged it out that it will be able to help an additional maybe 60 men a year.
Okay. So here's my question. How long do they stay at the house? And then what is the cost per person for their stay?
Great question. So currently guys stay at the current inn for 4 to 6 months, when then they do a rites of passage where they kind of graduate from the program and they get the opportunity to move to the alumni house, the apartment building, and they can stay there for up to 18 months. So, you know, we wrap services around guys for up to 18 months. After 30 days, and I hate to say after 30 days because we more clinical-based since I came in, after we reassess them after 30 days and we feel as though they're ready to look for employment, then they get the opportunity to go out and work, and then they're required to pay $10 a day. I hate the fact that some guys say, oh, I came in here July 1st, I get to go to work, but they haven't worked on anything to kind of heal. And so, again, that's the guys that kind of like get the check a couple of days and then they're gone, right? Because they haven't had chance to work on their trauma and the issues, or didn't take the program seriously to learn about their triggers. And so that's something that I'm working on to change.
What's it cost per person? If you were, because I'm looking for a smaller number than your big number of treatment, so that maybe I can help one person a year.
I understand, we talk about $2,500 a month for treatment for one guy.
Okay. Thank you.
What kind of support staff do you have and do you need in order to provide for the services you give to these men?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that all goes into programming, right? And so because we're opening a new facility that's Medicaid billable, we do have two counselors on staff. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. We have a medical director that we contract with. We also have a clinical supervisor that we're contracted with. And so we really have a nice clinical team. And I think in the beginning when Serenity Inn started out, it was more of a kind of like a homeless shelter. And we may talk about addiction, and it was just love, love, love. We have become more clinical in nature, where we're doing treatment plans, we're doing groups, we're identifying triggers. We're really helping the guys address their addiction problem or diagnosis, however you want to say it.
Ken, I've got a question on process. So guys, when they go through detox, where does this happen? I don't know where detox centers are. Are they associated with hospitals or freestanding facilities?
Great question. Because somebody out here, right, they may have a family member that's struggling or addicted or utilizing drugs. So detox facilities around Milwaukee, you have First Step, which is more of a county detox, right? It's public. It's not pretty. Anybody can go. If the police find someone on the streets, they may take them to First Step, which is the county detox. But then you also have Rogers, that accept insurance, so they have a detox facility. Dewey Center has a detox facility, which is Aurora. So it's different places. You can always call the back of your insurance card if you have insurance, and they will refer you to a detox facility. Some individuals may go through detox at the hospital just because they were found intoxicated and may end up in the hospital for a few days where they start the detox process. Serenity Inns is not equipped to take individuals that are actively going through withdrawals. And so that's why most of our referral base is coming from detox facilities like Rogers, Aurora, First Step. Those are like the main three. Some guys may call in, and looking for a bed or treatment, but then we required them not to utilize drugs within the last 3 to 4 days, so we can see if they're actively going through withdrawals.
Okay, thank you. Second part to the question is, once they survive detox, how do they get the referral? Where did they find out about Serenity Inns?
You could go to our website, but most detox facilities have our information. So they pretty much call and just say, hey, do you? And again, it's hit or miss. We get a lot of mothers that call and say, hey, my son, and I say, can you take him to detox and then have him call us once he goes through detox? We'll have some call that say, well, I haven't used it in a week. We may have them come in, but then we do a urine analysis to make sure that they're not actively positive for any drugs. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. All right. So Amy's next, and then Terry. And just along with that, I was going to ask, maybe for those who aren't familiar with addiction and stuff like that, what is the detox process like?
Oh, great question.
For people.
And I was just talking to another couple. We think that opioid, heroin withdrawals, they are probably the most painful withdrawals. It almost looked like flu-type symptoms, runny nose, runny eyes, cold, chills, which, you know, probably would start happening within 24 hours of not using any opiates. However, alcohol is the most dangerous. Alcohol is actually you'll get in a detox facility quicker for alcohol than you would for opiates. And cocaine really doesn't have physical effects withdrawals. It has more psychological. But because alcohol directly affects the central nervous system, then it's the most dangerous when you're going through the withdrawal process. You may have the shakes, the tremors, they call it. There's a scaling tool which we utilize for like alcohol or opiates, right? And so you kind of measure like the withdrawal symptoms. And so, again, because we're not equipped to like provide medication or do the 24-hour nursing care, that's why we send them to detox facility. But if a person experiencing withdrawals, they definitely should seek medical attention. You don't want to do it alone. And that's something that I always tell guys. But what I notice about opioids and like heroin withdrawals is that people are terrified to go through that. Terrified, like, no, I'm not. You know, so they do have medical assisted treatment, which is a whole nother. So medical assisted treatment is such as methadone, Suboxone. They also have Vivitrol. I like Vivitrol the best. I like working with people that's on Vivitrol. I shouldn't say that, but. Vivitrol is a once-a-month shot, and it's a blocker. And so even if you attempt to use the opiates, you will not feel any euphoric effect. The only thing about Vivitrol is that being because people are addicted, they'll try to overpower the Vivitrol, right? I can't feel anything. Let me take more. Sooner or later, it's going to break through, and they end up ODing. Suboxone, methadone, it's a little different, right? They do get some euphoric effect from that. But again, they know that it's not, it don't have any illicit substance in it. It's not cut with anything. It's used as a prescription. I don't discourage individuals from taking that. I just tell them to make a plan. It's like you go to any other doctor and the doctor prescribe you a medication. You want to know how long I'm going to take it. When can I get off? You know, what's the success rate here? And so I tell them to treat it just like any other medication, right? Like you need to make a plan before you leave the doctor. And then also look for to start to taper off. What does that look like? And so anytime I work with a guy that's on MAT, I always say, let's think about a discharge or when you're going to taper off. How long are you planning on taking the medical assisted treatment?
Hi, Ken. My question is, when the men come out and they're able to find a job, you, Serenity Inns, is supported with a group of places for them to go. Like, you partner with their skills and abilities, so when they're there and they're successful in the program and things like that, one of the things Serenity Inns does, this is my question, is find out where their skills are and then best suit them with a job that will set them up for success?
Great question. A lot of guys come to us with skills, right? Like, we have guys that come that's truck drivers, accountants, like different skill set. I would say since the pandemic, guys find jobs extremely quickly. It's a lot of places hiring. They go out in 2-3 days. I don't know if they just want to get out of Serenity Inns and go to work, but they find employment extremely quickly. We do work with like Employ Milwaukee, JobWorks, MKE, Apricity. I love Apricity. This is like a manufacturer that is only for people in recovery. And so even during work, they take time out and have a group like at lunchtime. And so we partner with them a lot. They probably tired of us because, but yeah, so we try our best to partner with people that support guys in recovery.
Earlier you said that approximately 30% don't complete the program. Out of that 30%, how many come back for a second or third try?
Quite a few. And the reason why is because they love the program at Serenity Inns. We do get guys, even maybe a year later, they'll come back to Serenity Inns. And so it's kind of funny. I see maybe two people that's on the graduation wall, because we got a wall of fame, but they're in treatment right now. So, again, addiction is it takes work. It takes work. And I allow them back in the program because it teaches a lesson. Like, we got to constantly work on ourselves. Every day. I don't tell guys, like, this is how much clean time. I say, man, you know, if you woke up before me this morning, then you got more clean time than I do. Because it's a constant work. Like, every day you just need to work on yourself. We can't forget. And so when guys come back, it's a prime example of they stop working on themselves. And then let's talk about it. Let's talk to the group on, like, what happened.
Ken, I've got one for you, which was a couple months ago we were at the Bader Philanthropies and with the Healing Network and sharing some about this. And there you shared a bit about dinner fellowship.
Absolutely.
And how that's kind of the special sauce of the program. And yes. I was wondering, could you just share a bit
about
that and why is that the special sauce?
Absolutely, because this is where all you guys can participate and help. Right. So we have dinner fellowship. Again, you heard me say that we kind of mirrored the program at Samaritan Inns in Washington, D.C., and it's something that we adapted since Serenity Inns opened. It's definitely our secret sauce. And so dinner fellowship is 365 days a year. We have volunteers come in and provide dinner with the guys. It's amazing, right? It's amazing because during dinner fellowship, the guys say a prayer, kind of eat buffet style, sit down, and it's two questions asked. It's either one question or two questions. These questions come from the residents. Whatever they decide to ask, it's very powerful. It breaks the stigma of addiction, right? We may already think or have in our mind what a guy that's struggling with addiction looks like. But when you're sitting there and you're hearing their story and you're communicating with them, you realize this is a real person. The addiction is not sitting in front of me, but this is a man that has a huge heart. One of the best questions I heard, and because I heard something different, but the guys asked the dinner fellowship guest, why are you here? Why do you come here and bring us food? And that's a very powerful question. Because really what he was saying is, why do you care about me? What makes me so special that you care about me? And I have seen guests come to tears just saying why Serenity Inns is near and dear to their heart, why they love to do this. And it gets real personal. I love dinner fellowship. You guys can go to the website. It'll show any open dates that we have for like this month, next month. You can sign up for dinner fellowship. It's usually 5:30 or 6 to 7. It's about an hour long. Come and get to know the guys. And I promise you that you'll leave there with something. And we have some people that come from this congregation already all the time, and they committed to dinner fellowship. And they'll tell you they have a wonderful experience. Even when I stay for dinner fellowship, I always leave there full with more than just food.
Ken, I don't actually have a question, but why don't you tell them a little bit about our staff and
absolutely
how they
that all our staff is in recovery. So all our staff. So it's not just me sending a message. It's everyone that works there is currently in recovery. The clinical director came through the program. His picture is on the wall, but he's director of programs. Our innkeepers, you'll see their picture on the wall, but they're currently working there and staying clean. Our counselor, he's been in recovery for maybe 6-7 years or so. And so our staff stay on a long time. It's real meaningful when your staff is not only there or not there for a paycheck, but they there because they care. Their passion is just like mine. Like, they care about the guys in recovery. And so, again, you see the love around Serenity Inns and inside the facility. So thank you, Carla, because, yeah. So please, in any way you can, if it's just a prayer, and I shouldn't say just a prayer, but if it's praying, right, continue to support Serenity Inns, continue to lift us up in prayer, lift up our ministry, because we're going to continue to move forward. And I know I'm almost out of time, but even with the new building, people said, Ken, you shouldn't build the building right now. You should wait. You shouldn't announce it. You don't have the money yet. But God didn't tell me to do that. And I had to challenge the board to say, where are our faith? We asked the guys to have faith. So where's our faith? We're going to move forward. We're going to build this building. Right? And so we are building the building. We continue to seek funding, but God made a way where we can move forward. And so if you get a chance, ride past there, you'll see the building is actually going up in the process. And should be ready to open the end of July or August. But thank you.
Okay, if it's a short question, because we got to wrap up. Okay.
Thanks. No. No, but a lot of our men have kids. They have kids, children, and may not be a part of their life. So when they see one of the youth come in, it helps lift their spirit, right? It helps them get them purpose. It helps give them something to work towards as they go back home and be with their children. It also gives them an opportunity to start building a relationship with their children. And so around Christmas time, a lot of guys were going through things. Some of them was able to buy their child a gift for the first time ever, you know, in years. And so we do welcome kids. The guys are extremely nice, and they'll be happy to talk with you. So just come. It'll be worth your while.
I second that. So, thank you so much, Ken, for sharing.
Thank you guys for having me.
And I do want to share just a couple things real quick, which is that, as Ken said, we, as a church, we have the fourth Thursday of every month for dinner fellowship. And if you're ever interested in participating or attending, Jill Grobe, right over here, is the one who helps to organize that. So please reach out to her. She'd love to get you involved. We're doing an extra special one this month on the 15th, this coming Thursday. So if you're interested this week, we're looking for that. And then this month, because we're highlighting Serenity Inns as part of our 12 months of ministry, we're collecting cleaning supplies for the house. For the gentleman to use, and every cleaning supply item that we get in, we're going to be donating an extra $5 towards Serenity Inns. So, good way to double up helping the work there. So. Okay, so a 24-pack of toilet paper is 24 items. We're going to be generous with this. So, all right, excellent. So. Ken, thank you again, and God bless you in your ministry. And everything you do. Go in peace, serve the Lord.